Hi friends, welcome to Interviews, Voices of Our Herbal Elders. This is my opportunity to talk to some of my dearest friends, people who have not only influenced my herbal work, but also have had a major influence on the revitalization of American herbalism. Most of us began our herbal work around the same time, in the early 1970s and 80s, when herbalism was still mostly underground, a place where plants actually thrived quite well. I love hearing people tell their herbal stories of how they began their herbal work, who and what inspired them, their favorite plant and healing stories, and I felt that others would be interested in hearing them as well. In fact, I felt it was important to capture these stories before this generation of elders passed on, as we're all destined to do. My welcome guest today is one of my oldest, dearest friends and fellow herbal adventurers, Jane Bothwell. Jane is a beloved and highly respected community herbalist who has trained and inspired generations of herbal students. She is the founder of the Dandelion Herbal Center in Northern California, where she offered comprehensive herbal training programs for over 30 years. Jane recently retired as director of the school and passed those responsibilities on to two of her longtime friends who are carrying on her legacy. Jane not only taught in our community, but also served as a holistic health consultant, in combining her herbal therapeutics with her training in hypnotherapy and flower essences. A popular teacher at herb conferences and events, she led international travel adventures to Greece, Italy, Baja, Costa Rica, and probably other places I don't even know about. Jane is a founding member of the American Herbalist Guild and served on the board of United Plant Savers, where she remains an active member of UPS since its founding in 1994. To me, Jane embodies the spirit of the community herbalist, providing herbal medicine, herbal consultations, and herbal education to everyone in her community who is interested, who had a need to connect with the plants. As she has so often said, connecting to our plant allies connects us to our roots and helps us heal. Amen. Thank you so much, Jane, for being with me today. I'm so excited about our conversation.
Oh, I'm really excited too. And a little nervous, but that'll go away once we get started.
Have you ever been nervous to talk to me? This is just a wonderful chat we'll have, and we're talking about our favorite thing, herbs. So it's going to be great.
Oh, really?
I thought we met, I thought we'd start because we met at herb school so many years ago. Actually, I don't even remember. I think it was over 35, maybe even 40 years ago.
Yeah.
We shared so many adventures there. Let's start there. I was going to ask, if you remember when you first drove up, when you first arrived at herb school and your first impression there, not of me, but of the school.
Oh, of course I remember. It was one of the most momentous moments of my life. So I'd been living up in the mountains in Utah and really enjoying the outdoors and being inspired. And I took Dominion Herbal College's correspondence course while I was there. And then I got to a certain point in the course and I said to myself, I need a live teacher. I really want to interact with somebody, not just a book. And so I found the California School of Herbal Studies, which was one of the few schools at that time, as you know, in the whole country where you could go study. So I applied to the program and, got accepted. And then I packed up my van with all my personal belongings at the time and my dog. And I drove from Utah to Emerald Valley. And I just remember so well pulling down that beautiful driveway through those incredible trees and plants and having this vision of this old schoolhouse and these gorgeous gardens. And I mean, it was magical and it's still magical. And it really still looks very much the same as it did when I came there in the late 70s. And The only issue was when my dog got out of the van, it was, oh, no, we don't accept dogs here. I'm like, oh, problem, because I was going to be living there at the school because, you know, you took a few people there in residence. And then you said to me, well, you need to talk to the gardener about this. So my dog was extremely well behaved and she won everybody over, including Tim Blakely, the gardener. And he said, okay, you can stay and the dog can stay. And I remember you were driving down the hill from your beautiful knoll. Oh, I lost a headphone. From your yurt up on the hill. And then you popped out of your car and all your radiance and beauty and your flower in your hair and your joyfulness. And I thought, I've landed.
You know, the reason with what happened with your beautiful dog, Jennifer, who we all loved, is we could never say no to you. It would have been impossible. I remember that. It's like you were the only person ever that we ever said, yes, you can have your dog there. Because it was impossible to say no to you. You know, your energy was so amazing. I remember that.
Thank you. Oh,
yeah. So you've been running your own herb school, the Dandelion Herbal Center in Northern California for, I think, over 3 decades now. And it has an incredible reputation. I've had the honor, thank you, of teaching there several times. But, you know, what inspired you to open the herb school and what was the experience like for you running that for so long?
Well, as you probably remember, when I was down at the California school with you, there came to be a point where you said to me, Jane, I want to teach new classes and I want you to teach the ones I'm already teaching. And I'm adding this because it's a good story. And I said to you, oh, you're kidding. You know, you want me to start teaching those classes? And you said, well, you've sat for 3 years in the same classes over and over. So I know you have the depth of information that it takes. And really, all you need to know is more than the people that come. Which I tell my students all the time when they're venturing out and teaching their own classes. And it's like, okay, and to be humble of what you don't know. And so I started teaching at the California school. And then when we moved up to Humboldt County, because I wanted to be a little bit more rural and not have to drive through Sacramento to get to the mountains. So we're close to a lot of mountains here. I thought, well, I want to keep teaching, and I love teaching, and I love teaching herbalism, and so I'll start a school.
Yes, you did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Just wonderful. Yeah. So, you know, for all of those people who might be interested in starting their own herb schools, do you have, I know it's a huge topic, so asking a simple question like this really simplifies it, but just would you have like any advice for them, like just 2 or 3 things you might like want to share with them about running their own herb school?
Sure. So when you referred earlier to me as a community herbalist, it made me, I always think, you know, what does that really mean? And I think one of the things that it's meant for me is teaching my classes, because in my community now, there's so many people who could all be teaching those classes because they've come and they've learned at Dandelion Herbal Center. So I would say for people wanting to open their own school, start teaching a few classes and see what kind of reception you get in your community and see how you like it. See if it like sparks you and brings you alive. And if it does, then teach a few more classes and then go to creating a school. And you mentioned earlier, Rosemary, about coming here to teach. And I think you came every year more than a few times because it was such an honor for my students to be able to learn from you and for us to be able to have a visit, of course, was our secondary motive. So in your own teaching of an herb school, then if your students are interested in opening one, I think a really great program is also bringing visiting teachers.
Oh, yeah.
So I started with teaching my own classes and then thinking, I wish these students could study with all these amazing other herbalists. And actually, my husband, Ken, said to me, why don't you bring them all here? And I said, okay. And so I created the visiting teacher program and then once a month brought an amazing herbalist like yourself and many others. So start small with your school and then just do what inspires you. Because if you're inspired and excited about it, it's going to be successful.
Now, those are such beautiful, wise words. You know, it's interesting when you shared that. It took me back. That's exactly how I started. You know, I just did these little classes and then people wanted a little more. And so then I started, you know, then I think I went from teaching my own classes to those events, the conferences, and then the herb school. And then it was like, yeah, definitely bring in more teachers because I only know so much. And also, it was also a way of broadening what I knew. I could learn from others, but also it gave this expanded vision to the students. So yeah, it's such beautiful. That's a beautiful, wise way to do it. And there's such receptivity right now. You know, one thing too, I wanted to share that I've always loved about your teachings is, you know, you teach a lot of wisdom about the plants, but it's always connected to the earth and spirituality. You have just woven this beautiful tapestry of information and spiritual contact, you know, ceremonies. And it's an experience. It's more than just going and learning information. It's, you know, it's really taking people into a deep experience.
Which I learned mostly from you at the beginning and continue to this day. So thank you. And yeah, I really want to honor you, Rosemary, for being just an amazing inspiration in my life and in the lives of so many herbalists. And the fact that you just don't stop, you're continuing. Now you're doing this program. And I know that so many people really appreciate what you're offering. And it's an honor to be your friend and to have you as my teacher.
Thank you, darling. I felt exactly the same about you, actually. So, you know, it's interesting. I've been watching these last couple years, you know, as you're transiting out of your active work at the school. I know you're still there and you still offer, you know, guidance and stuff, but to see that you've passed this, you know, living legacy on to your students. And I'm just curious, you know, I know it's a time of change for all of us, but what's this experience been for you watching these brilliant students who worked with you for years? I know they're also good friends, but they're taking over this amazing program that you've offered. And how is that? I mean, are you having any retirement blues yet? Or I should say maybe retirement greens, or is it feeling good? Or
oh, it's feeling good. And I was so thrilled that they wanted to take this school over because I didn't know if it would continue. And both Allison and Jessica were in the same 10-month herbal studies program, I think 20 years ago. They were together as students, and they've continued to work with herbalism and taught some classes with me and my program. And the fact that they even wanted to do it, I was just elated. And I have so much respect for who they are and what they have to offer, and no question that they have everything that it takes to run the school. And as we both know, our students come up and they do even a better job.
Yeah.
They offer new things, and it's been pretty easy to let it go because I was ready and I have real confidence in them, and I'm consulting and the classes are still happening here at my home. It's also where the school is, and I get to see students when they come up, and then I can just chat as I wish and then go out on a walk or go play in the garden. And so it's really been perfect. I'm really happy.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's nice to see that. You know, I think one thing that kind of came up to me when you were sharing is I know how much Jessica and Allison really respect and honor the teachings that you've passed on to them, which is why they're such amazing teachers, you know, also because of them and who they are, but also just the way that they honor their teachers. And I know for me, like, it's been easy to pass things on in part. I don't like to admit this often, but it's in part because I'm given recognition, you know, so I can step aside still feeling honored, you know. And I think that I also want to say, I think we did that incredibly well for our elders, those people that we learned from, because we have so much respect and honor for them. Maybe it's just something that people in the herbal community do, but I know for me, it's helped make it easier when I pass along. If I'm just completely forgotten, it's kind of like, oops. But, you know, and I don't like to admit that egotistically, you know, but it's true. I see your students really doing that. I see Allison and Jessica really honoring you for everything that you've shared with them and the opportunities you provided. So it helps, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does help. And I think it's something that we need to continue to teach younger herbalists, because I don't think it is always remembered. To really honor your teachers, honor, like, if you move to a certain area, who is already there? Who's teaching? You need to reach out and connect with people and honor them for their work. And it's great networking. And I think too, Rosemary, because I'm sure you did this when I've passed on my school, I also gave them all my material, all my handouts and all my slideshows. And I mean, I had worked on and refined over years and years. And it felt really good to be able to do that because I want it to continue. And also because they do honor me and all the other teachers they've had for this information. And the information, as we know, it's not our information.
Yeah.
It's the people's information. I mean, we've organized it and put it together in a certain way and spend all this time on our handouts and correspondence courses. But the information is the people's information.
I love you, Jing. You know, I think, I don't know, I think maybe you've heard me say this before, maybe not, but I know, like, years ago when I was in the middle of my incredibly busy world, you know, and was creating all these different things, and there were so many times people would come up and say, oh, you know, you're really my role model. And I would look at them and say, oh, no, you don't, I should not be your role model. I am completely, really, that's, they would always point to you, honestly, my good friend, mm-hmm. Jane Oswald. Now, she's my role model, because even in the middle of serving and caring for your community, you know, making yourself available as a healer and as a teacher and as a friend to so many people, you still were able to, like, find time and make time for yourself. You had really much better boundaries than I did. You know, you'd spend time with your family. I would call you sometimes to chat, and you'd be out walking with your friends or going camping. And I just admired that so much in you. And I thought it was, I really was not joking when I would say that. I thought it was a much better role model, really, you know, of looking for how to be of service and also how to care for yourself and those closest to you. And you've always really been the epitome, you know, the essence, I would say, of a community herbalist to me, because you made medicine for your community. You were there as a healer, providing healing guidance and then education for everyone interested. And you share what a little bit, I think you talked about this a moment ago, but would you share a little bit more about that community herbalist model and how you kind of incorporated that into your life?
Sure. And I'm still in my retirement making medicine and supplying the herb stores with a few medicines. And I still have a few clients, but just ones I've had for a long time. I'm not taking any more, and making medicine for them. And then people will, you know, come to you and ask you. And at this point, for me, being retired, if it's something fun that I'm already making, you know, and that I have, you know, I'll, you know, pass that on to people. But as a young, inspiring herbalist, it's a great service to, you know, create wellness packages for people. You know, they'll come to you, they'll ask you, you know, it's like, what, you know, what do you have? What can I do? And you look in your apothecary and you have a great time putting things together and supplying those. And also, as a community herbalist, you might want to volunteer and give a talk for Sierra Club or the Native Plant Society or the senior centers or the garden clubs. And it's a good way to integrate into your community. And it's an exciting way for you to share. I remember one time going to a garden club and talking to them all about the weeds that they could put in their salad instead of putting in their compost. And I mean, you saw all these aha moments happening. So there's a lot of opportunity to integrate into your community. And at this point in herbalism, it's, you know, a common term. And it's like when you and I were starting, Rosemary, I mean, we were really on the fringe. And, you know, it was really, you're a what? You do what?
That's so funny.
And I want to really honor you, Rosemary, for the amazing amount of work that you've done to really create herbs as a common language in our culture. And yes, you have burned the candle at both ends to do that. But that's what visionaries do. And that's what you are, you know. And without those visions, a lot of the rest of us wouldn't be able to go for walks with our friends.
Thank you, honey.
Yeah, so all of us have these, you know, these moments that kind of stand out to us. I kind of call them those aha moments when either that we feel like the plant saved us or they just called us. And I know you have many of those, but do you have a particular moment when you, you know, the plants just reached out and grabbed you?
I think the first time was my first camping trip. I didn't grow up camping. I grew up in nature, but on the ocean. And so the first time I went camping up in the Adirondack Mountains, and I was just so inspired and lit up by nature and plants. And then I came home and planted my first garden, and that, and actually I think my house plants maybe were a little bit before the first garden. The house plants started basically talking to me, you know. It's like, and I was just, wow, this is amazing, you know, this connection and this interaction. And so I just started exploring and then, you know, put a garden in and, yeah, breathed in all that wonderful energy of the plants.
Yeah. I know people always, you know, when we talk about plants talking to us, you know, people oftentimes think of a language. And I know Stephen Buhner used to talk about it as a lost language of plants, but I never really think of it as lost. It's sometimes forgotten. But one of the things that you do is you spark people to begin to hear the plant speaking. Do you hear them speaking like in a language, like an English, or just how?
No. It's just a feeling, you know, and a lot of people will say, you know, I don't hear the plants. I said, well, if you didn't hear the plants, you wouldn't be in this classroom. You have all heard the plants. It's just you hear them. It's a vibration to me, I think. It's an energy. It's what makes you come alive and what inspires you. And no, occasionally I will get, you know, messages that will come through maybe a little more specifically and strongly. But I think what that is my interpretation. That's me putting it into my words from the vibrations that I'm feeling.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that's how we're translating it. You know, the plants aren't, I don't think.
Yeah, that's beautiful. I agree so much. Yeah. And I also think they have so many languages, you know, they have so many ways that they reach out and grab people in all the very different ways that people might respond. So, yeah.
And it changes people's lives. I mean, once you respond to that, you awaken this part in your soul that is so exciting to awaken. And that's another very exciting thing about classes, because you're with all these other people who also are awakening their plant spirit energy within them and their connection. Yeah.
It's so beautiful. It's like, I call it plant witnessing, you know. It's that moment that the plants change our lives, and as an herbalist and a teacher, we get to see that, and it inspires us. It's, I think, one of the things that made teaching so much fun and made it so that we would just keep going on and on with it because, you know, we just
for sure
see how it would just change people's lives. And each time it changed somebody else's lives, it changed our lives, you know.
Yeah.
Such great Mana. So, honey, is there a defining moment in your that you remember maybe that you felt like you were actually were an herbalist, that you could call yourself that? Or
when you asked me to start teaching those classes. And I was like, oh my God. And then I thought, okay, maybe I'm an herbalist now.
That's come up in several of the different herbalists I've spoken to. They always say it's when the community tells you or somebody says to you, you know, they're asking for your what you know about plants. It's almost like it's not something that we necessarily pin on ourselves, but that our community or somebody, our elder or somebody then pins that on us. It's been answered that way several times. I think you're right about that. It's almost like others tell us we are now this, you know, before we really recognize it ourselves. Kind of neat.
And that brings me to a good story, I think. I remember one of the first times when, after I felt like I was an herbalist, that I went to Europe. And so I was traveling in Europe and with family or friends, probably both. And I would tell people, I'm an herbalist. Well, everybody's an herbalist. So like when you would tell people here at that time you were an herbalist, they're like, wow, what is that? What do you do? And in Europe, where it's, you know, the tradition was never broken and every grandmother and mother uses herbs, they would go, oh, yeah, you know, basically look at you and go, we're all herbalists.
That's so awesome. I love that. But in our culture, it was very different, right? Because that herbal tradition had been broken not so long ago. It's not like lost way back in history, but definitely with our generation.
Yeah.
We didn't know a lot of people that, you know, were recognizing. We were kind of the community that stepped forth and went, oh, that's what we are. So, yeah, but it is true. When you travel in many parts of the world, you do find that.
Yeah.
So, Jane, is there a teacher that has influenced your work the most? A teacher,
Rosemary, you are the person that has influenced my work the most.
Oh,
yeah, really. I mean, when I came as, and our age difference, I mean, we're the same age bracket, but I think that you have been so in the forefront at such a young age that, you know, a lot of us who are the same age have learned so much from you. And I think that my peers are more the people that I've learned the most from. Cascade, Anderson Geller, you know, just an amazing teacher and an amazing herbalist. Yeah. And when I think about it, I haven't had really any elders as teachers, which maybe I'll find now.
I think the elder that you were very close to, Grandpa Roberts, you were more of his teacher, his caretaker.
Oh, I was thinking about Grandpa Roberts. Yeah, he was the elder living on the Herb School property. Yeah.
And you kind of took him under your wing, you know. I was always scolding him and you were always like taking him under your wing. And then I know, you know, you were there with him when he passed away. You helped, you know, helped him make that transition to the other world. That was very powerful.
It was very powerful because I was just called to go over there. I didn't know he was passing. I had no idea. And I walked into a situation where I think there were two or three other people and he was definitely in the throes of dying and they were trying to keep him alive and telling him, you know, keep going, keep going. And I just knew my job was to say, it's time to die. I agree. It's time to die. You can die. Yeah. It was very powerful and it was definitely just a calling. And I'm honored to have been able to be there.
That's your magic, though. You know, you're so in tune that way. I've seen you do those things, not particularly that, but over and over again, just be there right where you're supposed to be to work your herbal magic with others. So sweet. I know you have so many herbal stories to share, but I love the stories. Do you happen to have one that just pops into your mind now, like a favorite herbal story that you want to share with the listeners?
Well, you're right. I have a lot of herbal stories, but I'm thinking about the first time that I walked into an herb shop, and that was in the middle 70s in Park City, Utah, when it was just this little tiny mountain town. Amazing. And without a stoplight or a condo. It's kind of different now. But so I walked into this herb store called the Root Cellar, and it literally was down these steps. And I had a cold, and my mom told me I was born practically with a cold. So I was used to having colds, and they would last 7 to 10 days. And so I just walked in that herb shop, and I said, you know, the cold bug. And she said, here, take these capsules. And they were Dr. Christopher's CNF capsules, which I'm sure you remember, the cold and flu capsules, which are mostly garlic. And I don't know, they may still manufacture them.
Yeah, they do.
Garlic with a little bit of parsley and maybe a few other things, but those are the main ingredients. Wow. And they said, well, here, try these CNF capsules and take two of them 4 times a day. And my cold lasted for 3 days instead of 7 or 10. And then I was a true believer. I'm just like, okay. So that was a really fun herbal story.
Yeah, like one of the first. You know, it's interesting about those old formulas from Dr. Christopher and Dr. Kloss. You know, we see so many new herb books, fabulous books being written with all kinds of formulas. But, you know, I still go back to some of those Dr. Christopher, Dr. Kloss formulas. There's something about those classics.
What do you think? Very classic. Oh, absolutely. Yeah, they're classic formulas. No, and new herbs come on the market and new formulas, but they're all interesting, but truthfully, we don't really need them. Yeah. I mean, because we have all that we need around us, for one thing, and then also all the old formulas are tried and true, really great formulas. And I think a lot of the new formulas are slants on the old formulas.
You know, and the other thing I have thought about also is that in those days when, like Dr. Shook and Dr. Kloss, Dr. Christopher were formulating, for many of them, that was all there was. You know, not so much in Dr. Christopher's days, but definitely Dr. Kloss and Dr. Shook. It was just so much more common. So they were using them for everything. So, and they were just, you know, they were the medicines that people were using. So there was just like a lot more familiarity with them. Yeah, it's the same with the herb books too. You know, like I'm astounded actually at the quality of the herb books. There's some beautiful, there was a while when it just seemed like every herb book coming out was kind of a reprint of the old ones, you know, but that changed about 10 or 15 years ago. And there's a lot of creativity. Have you noticed that as well?
I have noticed that. Yeah. And a while ago, maybe 10, 15 years, maybe more, the herbs were becoming so popular that herb books were being written by writers, not herbalists.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think now it is more that we're seeing a lot of herbalists with beautiful creations. And I always tell my students, when you're going to buy an herb book, make sure it's written by an herbalist, not just a writer, you know, and then... Yeah. And I think, too, what's happening with some of the old formulas is some of those herbs are being over-harvested and there isn't the supply that there used to be. So thus, United Plant Savers, thank you for one more of your inspirations that continues to this day. So then we change around our formula accordingly to what's more readily available.
Well, Jane, you did that. I want to really be thankful for you for that wonderful analog that you did. You know, you did that as a kind of a gift to United Plant Savers. You put together a very, very reliable. It's been used and reproduced so many times of the analogs for the at-risk plants. Do you want to just talk a little bit about that, maybe the process of how you came up with that list?
Sure. It was really a fun project, actually, because I would look at a plant that was on the UPS list, let's say slippery elm, which is dear to my heart. I've gotten so many great results using slippery elm. And then I would look at, well, okay, we need to minimize our use of this plant. What else could we use? And there's never, in my mind, a direct one-to-one analog for a plant. There are analogs that satisfy maybe most of the actions of that plant, there are analogs that satisfy a couple actions of that plant. So when you look at, like, what do you want Slippery Elm to do, then you'll say, okay, I want Slippery Elm to be really soothing to the GI tract. And then you think, okay, well, marshmallow would fit in there really, really well. And so then you look at, well, I want Slippery Elm in this formula because I want it as a demulcent for bone building. And then you think, oh, well, comfrey would even be better. And that's another demulcent and very easily available. So you just look at the action that you want that primary herb to create. And then you say, what other plants could do that? And maybe you even need a couple plants to take care of what that one plant was doing.
Yeah, that's brilliant. So yeah, that list is very useful. People can, they have access to it by going to United Plant Savers. They still provide that analog list you did. That was really awesome. Oh, I heard you, you were just talking about comfrey. You happened to mention it. And I just wanted to ask you, you know, your thoughts and opinions about comfrey, if you don't mind. It's not a trick question. I just really always love to know what people feel.
I remember that we were at Brighton Bush Hot Springs where we did a lot of herb retreats, right? And at what we started to do at Brighton Bush is before the retreat where all the participants came, we would gather as herb teachers. Remember those great times? So we were gathered as herb teachers and we were all in that beautiful lodge and we were talking about what was up and people started talking about comfrey and the controversy. And I remember Ed Smith standing up and going, this is like someone talking trash about my grandmother. And so that comes into my mind all the time.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah, and comfrey's an amazing medicinal plant, and I use it a lot. And I use the root, I use the leaf, I use the flower. But I also keep in mind that used in large quantities over a long period of time, it could be detrimental to some people. And so I wouldn't recommend, you know, using it. But I think it's got to be large quantities over long periods of time. But if somebody has a broken bone, I mean, that's the number one I'm going to go to. Number one. And I just made up, one of my friends just broke her leg, actually. And I've been making syrup up for her. And she's having a great recovery. And so I put in lots of comfrey root and gota cola and horsetail, and what else did I put in there? A little bit of cinnamon, and it's just been a great syrup for her. She's recovering really well, and she's our age, and as we know, it takes us a little longer, but she's ahead of her recovery schedule. So
you're a good formulator, my dear. I also am an advocate for comfrey. You know, I always like to, it's a nice discussion to have among herbalists. And for those who are listening to the program, comfrey is one of those herbs that there are a few species. It's not widely found, but some of them in the young roots and sometimes the young leaves, there's an alkaloid called paralysine alkaloid that's sometimes found. It's not always found in the plant. And as Jane said, usually it has to be used in large amounts over long periods of time. But it created quite a controversy within the herbal community. Many herbalists discontinued use it. Many of them, like myself, and I'm sure Jane did too, I looked at the research thoroughly. I read all of those reports, which I don't love doing, but I really could not find anything that was firmly saying that this plant was toxic. So I take the same kind of stand that you do. You know, I use it. Anybody who feels comfortable using it, I feel totally fine putting it in the formula. So if somebody's not comfortable, then I say, well, there's other herbs that can be helpful. But none quite like comfrey. That's the thing with comfrey. It has such a special place. It's so rich in that allantoin, you know, it's so healing for bones and joints. But whenever I sit with the plant, I always hear it doesn't care. It's going to keep on growing. It's going to keep on being there. And I think as time goes on, we're going to find that, you know, the studies will be pretty much figured out to be not really have been done well or completely. So, yeah.
It's really important to look at those studies and also who's financing the studies, if you can find that out. And also what part of the plant is used. So like kava, when that came out, we used the kava root, and the studies that were showed detrimental activity to the liver on kava were done on the leaf. So it's, and also what I think about is, look at pharmaceuticals. Look at the list of side effects that are possible from most all pharmaceuticals. And for most all herbs, that list is a lot shorter. But I think because herbs are something that's newer to most of us, and that we're not as confident or secure about any little thing that somebody will say, yeah, we're going to get alarmed about. But there definitely are plants that, you know, people shouldn't use at certain times and or ever for some people. And it's important to know that. But
good. That's a good sound advice. So who are your special plant allies, those special plants that you just can call on at any time that are always show up for you?
Well, I was just down in the Anza-Borrego Desert. And so I love the desert. I don't live in a desert community, but I go there hopefully once a year. And so Yerba Santa, there were beautiful patches of Yerba Santa. And that's a plant that I really love. And I mean, I love them all, as we do, right? But I discovered that when I was pregnant with my daughter, and I forget what it was, some respiratory infection I had, and I wanted to take golden seal. And golden seal is what I had taken before, and it always really helped me. But there's some possible contraindications of taking golden seal, and, you know, a dose that you would take over 10-month period of time. So I thought, well, I'm going to find something else for this respiratory infection. So that's when I discovered Yerba Santa. And ever since, I've used it so much for so many respiratory issues and allergies and asthma. And when we were in the desert, I picked just a little bit, and then I did a cold infusion and let it sit overnight, and we sipped on it, which was just delicious. It's so fragrant. Or put a little bit in your water bottle. And then here on the North Coast, of course, nettles. I mean, they say in aromatherapy, when in doubt, use lavender. In herbalism, when in doubt, use nettles. So I think most all herbalists love nettles, but I love nettles for the food, nettle lasagna and nettle omelets. And
yeah.
And then, as you've taught us, Nesto, which is pesto with nettles. And when I came home from the desert, I had students house sitting for me, and there was a big jar of Nesto on the table. And I thought, yes, they have benefits from your students. And nettle is so nourishing. And I think that's a category that herbs really fill very, very well. They're good for acute and chronic ailments, yes. And there are other things for acute and chronic ailments, but I don't see other things that have that strong nourishing factor other than as a material medicine. I mean, yeah, there's, you know, walking with your friends and getting a massage. But but as something that you're ingesting or surrounding yourself by, nettles is just builds up your stamina and your strength, and the stronger that we are and the more our chi is vital, then the more joy that we have and the more resilience we have for dealing with what comes to us every day. And we all have many challenges and don't know even what the next moment is going to bring. So chuck up on nettles.
Yeah, daily nourishment, that's what does it. You know, we're talking about daily nourishment, Jane, one of the things I just have admired about you is even now as you're going into your, you know, elder years, you still go out and put your backpack on and you go backpacking in the mountains. Like,
I do.
Like, 9,000 feet or something. You know, you'll still do those like 10-mile hikes with this huge backpack on your back and your dog at your side.
Yeah.
I just so admire that. I always tell Jane when she's invited me, I'm going to take my llama along.
Well, Henry. Thankfully, as I've gotten older, backpacking gear has gotten a lot lighter. So I'm very happy for all those innovations. So my pack's a lot lighter than it used to be. But yes, that's probably my most favorite thing to do is to backpack anywhere. So, and there's beautiful mountains close by, and the serenity of being away and the fact that you have everything that you need is in your pack. And if it's not, you might need something else, but you're not going to the store, you're not going. And so there's this quiet that can come also because you're not thinking about, oh, well, I could go do that, or I can get this, or maybe I should make that phone call or answer that email. You know, those options aren't available. So it's, and I really love watching the plants. When you're first on a trail, there'll be some invasives, and pretty soon it's all natives. It's all native plants. And I discovered not too long ago that we have a native dandelion. I was up in the mountains pretty high, and I thought, that's a dandelion. I thought, what? And so I came back and I looked in my books, and sure enough, we have a native dandelion in our mountains.
That's crazy. So is it just smaller and more compact, or?
A little bit, yeah, you know, but it's still a very robust looking dandelion. So,
Another question I wanted to ask you, and again, I'm sure you have so many stories, but is there a particular like miracle story? I love to call this plant witnessing too. You know, it's like when we talk about those times when the herbs just stepped up and, you know, just healed something that almost seemed impossible or whatever, or just really challenging. So do you have a story that you want to share with us?
The first story that comes to mind is when we were camping in Point Reyes National Seashore, and we were at a group campground. We were the herb students. I'm not sure if you were there. And there was a group of kids that were at a campsite close to ours, and you had to backpack into these campsites. Yeah. And all of a sudden, we heard a big ruckus going on. And so, you know, you never know, should I go over? Shall I take my first aid kit? And so, and I'm sorry to those that came with me that I don't remember who was over there with me, but I went over and I had my little first aid kit, and one of the children, they were just roughhousing, and one of them had been pretty injured and looked like they were in a fair amount of pain and maybe even with a broken bone. And so I'm thinking, oh gosh. And then you don't know, you know, like, what do I offer and what are people going to think? And, you know, it's just going to be, but I just thought, I'm going to offer it. They can say no, the counselors for these kids. And so I got out my rescue remedy and I said, you know, this is rescue remedy. It can help with trauma and shock and pain, and we do want to try it. And they said, yes, definitely. And so we put a couple drops under this young girl's tongue, and then we put some on her injured leg. And she went from screaming and hysterical to sleeping. It just totally put her out. And at that point, the counselors started talking to me, and they were police officers from the San Francisco Bay Area. And these were troubled kids, and they were taking them into the seashore, into Point Reyes, for a healing journey. And they told me later that, I don't remember how far it was to pack out, but that they could get her out and packed her out with her still remaining in a calm state. And I gave them, of course, the rescue remedy and told them to keep taking it, keep giving that to her. And they said she remained in a calm state till they got to the hospital emergency room, and she did have a broken leg.
That's amazing, Jane.
You know, it was a miracle.
It was a miracle. That story is almost the exact same story that was so similar when I was still living on the Russian River, and I was at a big outdoor party, and a little boy, his name was Augie, little August Augie. He was about 2 years old, and he'd been, or maybe four, I think, and he'd been riding a tricycle, and he caught his toe in the spoke of the tricycle, and it actually severed his toe off. It was hanging there. His big toe was just hanging there, but the And the same thing, it's like people were hollering and screaming. I ran up with my first aid kit, and the very first thing I did was give him Rescue Remedy. And he literally fell asleep in his father's arms. And then I rode with them to the hospital in Santa Rosa, to Sonoma County Hospital. And they were able to save his toe. They actually put it back on. Well, we put it on. We held it on, but they actually stitched it on, and he was fine.
Yeah.
So Rescue Remedy did the same thing. He slept all the way to the hospital. I kept trying to give it to his father, and he was hysterical the whole way. It didn't work for him.
Right.
It was amazing. It was one of those stories. I say the same thing. It was like a miracle. Do you want to share what Rescue Remedy is? Because there may be some people listening who don't even
know. Rescue Remedy is a Bach flower essence, or as I've learned, Bach flower essence. That's how you pronounce his name.
Yes.
And even though most of us say Bach. And it's a combination of five different flowers. And Dr. Bach came up with a system of healing called the flower essences. There are 38 different flowers and only one formula. And the formula was Rescue Remedy. He felt like that particular formula was helpful for so many people that he wanted to offer that. And otherwise, it was best for us to create our own personal formulas from the other 38. So it's a combination of, we'll see if I can get all five. I usually get four. You can help me. Rock rose and clematis and cherry plum and impatience and what?
Well water.
And well water. Impatience and, oh, what did I say? Star of Bethlehem. Those are the five flowers. We think I would know after teaching this how many years, right? So it's an amazing remedy to have, and great in your first aid kit, taking internally, topically. They make Rescue Remedy pastilles now that are little candies that
they're
people
so good.
Like. Yeah, they're tasty. If you can open that container, you got to figure out how to open it.
Yeah. They're too good. I eat them like candy. So I have to like.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a wonderful formula. Yeah. That's a miracle story for certain. I wonder if those policemen still remember that story.
Well, we talked about it and they said, you know, we should have this in our first aid kits as police officers. I said, yes. So maybe they do. Wouldn't that be great?
Yeah, that would be great, honey. So what do you see when you were first starting your herbal work? What did you see as some of the challenges that were facing you? You know, when you look way back at that time, what were facing you? Or-
but back then, the challenges were people were so skeptical, you know, about herbs and, you know, what do they do? And how do you know what you're doing? And are they dangerous? And, you know, is this going to be effective? And how do you, you know, because there was... It was a resurgence of this medicine, like you had said earlier, that had been forgotten for a while.
Yeah.
So it was a challenge to present in a way that people could receive. And at first, all the classes were just all us wonderful young hippies, right? And then I remember it took a while, but the classes would evolve to all people from all different walks of life. You know, it wasn't just the hippie generation that was really into herbalism. It was the baker and the grocer. And, you know, it just started to get more popular and more mainstream. And when it got to be more mainstream, then it was easier because it was more accepted.
Yeah. Definitely easier in the acceptance. I think it engendered a different set of problems, you know, like then we were looking
yes.
at these at-risk plants and over-harvesting and commercialization and stuff. But you're right, as far as it being more acceptable, you know, it definitely is. And I agree with you. There was such a shift. You know, we in our generation could definitely see that shift. So what do you think are some of the challenges that are facing this younger generation of herbalists coming up now?
I want to digress a little, and then I'll answer that if you don't mind, because what came to me with this other question, I mean, with your comment about the problems that have come from the popularity, is that you would start to see almost, you know, every drink on the shelf would have some you know, oh, this has echinacea and this has, you know, ashwagandha. And so, and I remember Michael Moore, another great herbalist, we're going to honor him, learned a lot from him. And when that first was happening and we're talking about there's like no plant material in these beverages that they're marketing. And he said, but there's green noise, and it's really important to get green noise into as many people as possible.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, that's another great quote.
Wow. Yeah. Yeah.
Bless that man.
Really remember that. Yeah. Okay. So the other question you asked me when I stopped was what? What did you just ask me?
Well, I was just wondering, you know, it's, I think the herbalists today are facing a very different challenges, not necessarily bad, but just, you know, there's like a whole different challenge that faces them. They don't have to worry about the skepticism or the availability or, you know, are there herb books and stuff. So they have, but they definitely have challenges facing them today. And I just was wondering what you think they are and what your reflection on that is.
I think one of the challenges is as herbalism has gotten more popular, there's more of a tendency to become more scientific and to go a little bit more towards the medical model that we all were trying to change.
Yeah.
And I really do feel truly that herbalists now are still trying to really work and change that medical model so that it works better for people, for all of our health. But I think that the tendency to try to fit herbalism into a medical model is challenging. And I think that it takes more thought at, or it just takes deeper thinking of how to integrate that and what to do with that and what that really means as far as herbs as our medicine. How does that integrate into this model that we've known as our medicine that we all grew up with? And it's not the same model. And that's what's so exciting about it. But trying to find and create a new model is a really inherent good challenge for younger herbalists, a model that's accepted in the scientific realm as well as the folk realm of herbalism.
That's beautiful. Do you have faith they'll find that model?
Yes.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
You know, you've done so much with herbs your whole life, you know, ever since I've known you 30, 40 years, right? But I'm just wondering when you look back, what you feel the greatest about, what you feel the proudest about of all the work you've done with plants?
Probably teaching the people that I've taught. Because at this point in my community, it's, oh yeah, you know, I studied with you 25 years ago. And oh yeah, my friend's studying with you now. And then I had the next generation. You know, my mom studied with you, my dad studied with you, and now I'm studying with you. And so I think that's what I'm proudest about is continuing to spread this knowledge and this information in an empowering way for people. It really empowers people, is what I see. And it empowers you to take more personal care of yourself and your family, but it also empowers you because you have a connection with your environment. And when that connection to your environment happens, your world expands. And with that expansion comes an expansion in consciousness, I think.
You know, sweetie, thank you so much for that. When you were just sharing that, I was thinking about a statement that I used to make. You know, I would write it in my little manual when I was doing the teacher training program that I did for many years. And was always to be an impassioned teacher, you have to live an impassioned life. And you have lived such an impassioned life. But I think about when you said about, you know, that connection with nature and, you know, all the time that you spend in nature is to nurture you, but also so that you have that connection with the plants. So they are speaking to you, right?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
And then the other thing that I have so admired about your teachings that I've, you know, learned a lot from you is just that very deep spiritual connection that you have with you know, the way that you hold circle and the way that you sing. And whenever, you know, even in those large conferences or your small classes, whatever, you would be step forth to say prayer, you know, and just call on the spirits. I mean, everybody could just feel it, you know, just the whole spirit energy would be so strong in those circles. So, and that's because you live that life. It's not because you're teaching it, yes, but you're living that life. And that's the inspiration and the impassionment there that you embody. So if you have any advice to pass on,
let me just say one thing here. So
please,
to me, that the spiritual aspect of herbalism is as important as nettles is nourishing. And the circles that we do and the songs that we sing and that the prayers and all of that I learned in my herbal studies. I learned at all the wonderful conferences that we put on and all the teachers that would come, like Brant Segunda and Don Jose and the Huichol medicine. I really want to honor their spiritual teachings and the prayers that would come through. And I want to encourage younger herbalists to just listen and listen to your own inner voice and start praying and with your students and making offerings and giving thanks, because those rituals are equally as important. And they, the quiet that comes at the beginning of class when you do a circle and everybody just takes a deep breath and goes inside is really, really amazing. And I never thought I would be somebody that was going to be leading prayers in circles. That's not that I learned in college. But I just got inspired by all the times that I was part of that.
Yeah.
And
I saw that in you, which is why I would oftentimes step forth and say, okay, Jane.
Yeah,
I was very, you know, and you are right. I love what you just said about it's a practice also. You know, it's not like it just comes just like naturally. It may be a calling, but we have to practice our calling. You know, the other thing that you said that was really inspiring was, and reminded me that we were very fortunate that we had so many elders who were so willing, like from many, many different traditions. They were willing to teach us, you know, the songs and the ceremonies. And there was much more generous sharing. You know, they were there to learn and to give and to receive. Those earth teachings were very important to our generation. And I think also honoring those teachers, I think that's one of the beautiful things that we're realizing, you know, that's becoming even more pertinent, is to really honor the traditions that shared, you know, so the teachings can be passed on. So, yeah.
And when they're passed on, it's inevitable that they're going to change a little bit, whether you meant to change it or not, you know, but that's kind of what happens with teachings. You know, you teach me, I teach you, you know, we teach different people, and it's not going to stay the same. You know, it's fluid. And what's important, I think, is that the intention stays the same. And that the honoring of the tradition stays the same, whereas the actual ceremony itself is going to change a little bit. You know, that's human nature and evolution.
I so agree. And it's also it's evolution. It's the way that life continues. It has to change, or it doesn't. It becomes stagnant. Oh, my dear, it's been so fun visiting with you always.
You too.
And I'm my closest, dearest friends through this wonderful herbal adventure we've been on. I want to just thank you so much for joining us, and thank all of our listeners for being here with us today. And I'll see you on the next Herbal Adventure.